Welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. I am your host, Demetrius Malbro, and we have a great guest lined up for you today. We are going to dive into a very important aspect of protecting your data, and that's making sure that you are performing things like rehearsals and disaster recovery tests, cyber recovery tests, and just being prepared and being ready for when that event happens to hit your data or your environment. So I want to welcome on Justin Gesso, who is the Senior Director of Marketing at Betsol. Justin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Demetrius. Doing very well.
All right. And first, tell us some information about Betsol and what your company does and all the great things about it.
Sure. You know, and even though I have the marketing title, I've been in product management in this space. You know, going back early in my career, I worked in a control center at a large company where we were there to simulate and stress test disasters. So this is a space that's been pretty near and dear to me for quite a while. But yeah, with a company called Betsol, and we have backup software that is called Zamanda. You know, and our strength is that Betsol is an IT service provider to enterprises. So, you know, you can think of that as a MSP that works with large, complex environments that are globally dispersed, typically have a mix of on-prem and, in the cloud infrastructure. And they're usually in the process of migrating to the cloud, optimizing for the cloud, or moving stuff back out to some degree. And so through all this, it gives us a lot of real-world experience and testing DR readiness and, you know, recovery scenarios and like wide set of parameters and products. The reality is pretty scary when you look at actual readiness of a lot of companies. I mean, it really is. So that's our IT services side. And then we have Zamanda as the backup product. Product's been around since 2005. I bet we've had VR features since before a good number of your listeners were out of high school. It's true enterprise class backup software supports whole wide variety of workloads and environments. APIs expand into custom scenarios, been very popular in education and defense, like classified sites, you know, and released some, we've modernized it a lot over the years and recently released something that's very intuitive, easy to manage, especially at scale. Brings all the great features you want, like client-side dedupe, forever incremental, easy to manage. And wrapped around that, which we can talk about in a little bit, is customer support is like a big differentiator for us. So our net promoter scores double the industry average. Our architects like getting in with customers, talking to them, understanding how they're using it. But, you know, really the kicker is we're about 50% less total cost of ownership than the competitors. That's kind of our claim to fame there. And that's true up and down the stack, whether you're a big company, small or medium enterprise. We compete on the feature level with the big providers, but we're going to come in more cost effective. And hopefully that's some cost savings people can take back and apply to some of what we'll talk about.
Okay. Well, great. I appreciate you providing that information. And wanted to make sure that the Gumbo listeners really, you know, understood and walked away with some great insights and best practices just around, number one, because we're not talking disaster recovery a lot. And mostly we're specifically talking about ransomware and just being able to recover from ransomware. Of course, that's the new hot thing. And we're now hearing about it in the news, and there's all sorts of regulations that are cropping up around making sure that you have to disclose an event, you know, within a certain number of days, file an 8K. Yeah. I mean, it's getting pretty sticky from that perspective. But what types of conversations, or I guess the number one conversation that you have around the aspect of disaster recovery?
Yeah, I know people beat the backup testing down. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of conversations. You've had past guests that have talked about it. And I think what we can talk about more is recovering from a disaster, specifically where there's been some form of data loss. So there's different types of disasters, different types of loss, and, you know, best case you can do an HA type flip over to another environment, you're good to go. That's probably not reality, but when there's data loss, that's a very particular type scenario, and that can be ransomware. can be as simple as power outages and human mistakes. I mean, that kind of runs the gambit. But you're right, really, this is still number one question we get from customers and prospects, which is, great, this looks, software looks to meet our needs or whatever. Can you help us put together a plan to ensure we're ready to recover if we actually need to? And that's such a big question, but it is still the top question we get. Almost everybody asks us for our opinion there. And
yeah,
you know, I think despite all the information out there, from even what you see, you can get a whole bunch of things out online, podcasts, whatever, I still think there's like two things that people tend to get wrong. You know, one is they're not really aligning with strategy from the top of the company down on the way they're testing and preparing for disaster. Yeah. And then number two is probably too much reliance on automation, and that's going to spill over into AI. So I guess like what you're saying, if Gumbo listeners, if they were to take anything away from today, want it to be like, hey, maybe I need to put a critical eye back on my DR testing and how are we actually going to respond if something goes wrong?
Yeah. And are you still seeing like the typical or traditional backup administrator out there? I know that role has shifted and changed quite a bit now, especially if, depending on the size of the company, if it's small, medium, or large, they may have a team of backup administrators, but they may have different titles and they're also doing things like cloud and maybe even the one that's going to help recover Active Directory in case something happens with identity management. I mean, it's a broad shifting role now, but what types of conversations are you having with backup administrators, if you're still even seeing individuals with that title?
Yes, you're so right. And it's that I think what we went from, you know, maybe even like 10 years ago, was you had in IT, you had a team of people managing one application, like maybe a backup application. Mm-hmm. Now it's like totally flipped on its head. You have one person managing multiple applications. So kind of goes to what I mentioned earlier about the newer release, like our Xamana product, is we recognize that's a reality. And these things have to be easier to administer, but it opens up more challenges in this space of planning and testing. We do still have backup administrators, I mean, but it spills in much more broadly to system admins, DevOps, you know, cloud infrastructure automation people. I mean, it's a pretty broad gambit of people who need to play in this space now.
Okay.
We easily have, on any given customer call, six people join of various roles within a company. And you're right, you're probably not seeing that backup administrator role nearly as much as we used to.
And there's also more people that's in the actual approval process as well. Like, you used to be able to speak to maybe one or two or three guys. Yeah, my manager needs to sign off on this.
Yeah.
And maybe the director of IT or something like that. And then the deal goes through. But now it's like a whole committee of buyers, right? And it's dragging out the whole process. But I know we're kind of talking about some of the financial sides of just protecting data overall. And you're familiar with 3-2-3-2-1, right? Like kind of a traditional fashion of doing backups. And you've heard of 3-2-1-1. And I think people are, I don't know, there's so many flavors of 3-2-3-2-1. I lost count. But is that enough? Is 3-2-1 still enough? Or I've even heard someone say that 3-2-1 is not enough.
Yeah, I mean, so the extra one, immutability, which is going to be important part of, does that, you know, depending on the type of disaster, if that's a malicious one, that's going to be critical. The more threats are emerging, they're coming and specifically attacking the backups themselves or attacking the backup software itself. So having immutability in the storage, that's really important. I think a lot of that started in the cloud. So 3-2-1-1, keeping an immutable copy in the cloud, great, but that's, you know, comes back to the topic of planning and testing. What's the reality of restoring data, especially large amounts, from the cloud, and how fast can you actually recover from that? So I'd say, is it enough? You know, what we see is a lot of this immutability moving to on-prem with the high performance NAS boxes where you have, you know, the local high-speed connections, NVMe storage, immutable, maybe S3 compatible interface on top of that. So you interact with it just like the cloud, but that stuff's right on-prem. And And that's an extra step to help you recover should something hit you there locally.
And as far as disaster recovery testing or planning, so I used to be a backup administrator a very long time ago. And I am even afraid to say how long ago that was, but I remember I used to fly out to New Jersey and I used to make fun of the names like Weehawken or something like that. And would go to this data, this physical data center. And before that, we would pick and choose, okay, here's the disaster date. And the backup administrator would go in and say, this is the list of tapes that we need to make sure that these list of tapes are sent over to the disaster recovery site so we could recover. Because if we're missing a tape, we're screwed.
Right. Right.
But now I know we're in the world of cloud now and things. We have a way of copying data, migrating data over into a disk repository so that that data can be recovered quickly. But what are some of the newer ways or newer methods of recovering or doing a disaster recovery test? Because I am so removed from that world. I'm curious, really.
Yeah. Look, I think the reality should probably be somewhere in the middle of what you describe and somewhere people are going. And I started this off by saying, I think there's two things people are doing wrong. One is not aligning with leadership. Number two is relying too much on automation and AI. So let's just hop into number two because it actually builds into the leadership thing. So if we look at number two, if people are relying too much on automation and AI, you know, automation is critical. So you can't physically go out to these places like you're talking about. It's great. It's critical. You have things like Terraform to provision your cloud infrastructure. You need that infrastructure as code. That's true. You do need that. You have Ansible, get your config management. You can set up playbooks for these scenarios rapidly, get things up and running at scale, which is great. And then you have the backup software with this, like, has some of its own automation. Like, you know, in Zamanda, you can, it can test itself, generate reports, do integrity checks. There's a restore simulator. And then, you know, we can actually look at transaction integrity, not just the data integrity. Okay, all that falls in like the automation space. And then AI, I'm sure, is going to kick in here, which we can talk about. But, you know, look, all of that can't really handle edge cases in a fully robust way. You know, this may be a little controversial, but you actually need that human in the loop. You need the guy like you're describing. You know, you need humans to sign off. And you need humans. I think like the biggest thing I see is you need that muscle memory. So when there's a stress of this company crumbling around you and people are looking over your shoulder, stuff's going wrong, you know, you need that muscle memory to go through. It's not the time to be looking at manuals. It's not the time to, you know, say, who do I contact to fix this? So, you know, for the backups and drills we manage, like regardless of the level of automation, there's always human sign off at every step. And that's like daily, that's weekly, monthly, quarterly. Automation works within its rails, but it's just never going to be as resilient as humans. And, you know, like, I bet you ran into this. I think outside of like, even if it's not a malicious disaster, just day-to-day operations, you have things like software updates, security hardening that's blocking some port you weren't accounting for, you know, new policies that have been pushed out. Someone's always making a change to DNS. Like, I think every single RCA for why something didn't come back up, there's DNS changes sitting there.
Yep, so, I agree.
You know, all that stuff happens outside of an emergency disaster scenario. So if this stuff goes in chaotic, unexpected ways, and, you know, I think if you're relying on automation, you can quickly create, like what we've seen is you can run some scripts or something and create 500 assets, recreate them. They all have a problem. Now you got to go figure out, why didn't that work? I got to bring all these back down, troubleshoot it, and then start over probably manually. So all that to say, really, I think the automation is very much a double-edged sword. You know, it's only good in the hands of like well-trained, well-prepared people. So like to your, what you describe, I think that reality is somewhere in the middle. You need both. As people move to the cloud, the automation, very attractive, but it can be problematic as well.
So you're not against automation and AI and all of the wonderful things that are coming down the pipe now, because everyone is jumping in the foray around wanting to have some type of AI functionality or chatbot or copilot or feature or some way that we can give to our customers the ability to quickly ask questions and get information back about how healthy the backup environment is, helping to troubleshoot maybe. And you mentioned customer service or customer support earlier as well, and how important that is. How critical do you think it is to have a really savvy, smart, well-oiled machine when it comes to being able to support, especially like a backup product, right?
I mean, it's a huge deal. And I think that needs to be part of any disaster recovery plan and testing. There's a trend in almost any industry where you're getting more, I would say, lower skilled people. And it's not a knock, it's just a reality, who are relying pretty heavily on knowledge-based articles as the front line of defense. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe issues pass what they're capable of. It gets escalated up. Maybe you get up to like a tier four type resource who may be a developer and they understand how the code works very well, how their modules work, but maybe they don't really understand it in an actual operational environment. They don't understand it in your environment. So, you know, the vendor management is critical here. And I would say in an actual disaster, especially if something was malicious, you're going to engage the vendor. You're going to need to. So they should be part of your test plan. And it's your basics of understanding the contract, SLAs, you know, what they're on the hook for supporting. But you need to test that and see who are the types of people you're getting. And then what's the supportability of the product. So there's advantages to having, you know, big on-prem software that you install and fully maintain yourself. But troubleshooting those type setups can be really difficult. You don't want to get stuck sending logs back and forth or here, let's run this script, collect this information, send it.
Right.
That stuff's all too slow. You know, with a more SaaS-based software, much easier to diagnose, keep up to date. You know, a lot of times the support people will have direct access and see what's going on. And so your time to resolution on anything is going to shrink very, very dramatically. So it's an important, I think, really critical thing to check as you're picking a solution out there.
I agree with that, because that's the number one thing that can actually turn off a customer is if they call into support, number one, they have a down system or they're trying to do a restore of a critical system and the support person is not knowledgeable and, you know, they're putting you on hold a lot and checking knowledge base articles and just not really speaking with that confidence that's needed. It can definitely turn off like a high-powered customer who is spending lots of money there as well. Just I'm just having flashbacks of days when I was doing support. Because, look, don't get me wrong. It's a great way to learn. I mean, you can learn the product inside and outside when you are supporting it. And you have to be up on all the latest releases and all the bugs and interfacing with the engineers and being able to, you know, have those conversations. And so you get really good from that perspective, but sometimes it takes a while, like a year plus to really get good. I want to maybe tap into some of your stories. Like, do you have any horror stories or anything you could share? Like you've seen out in the field, of course, not naming names, but maybe something that someone needs to be on the lookout for. So they won't fall for that trap themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the short answer here is, and to put this in, you know, to kind of let this one hit reality, is businesses shut down when they lose data. They just do. Especially more mid-sized businesses, they can't survive loss of critical data. So we do have some of our own stories from customers. I think I've listening to a few of your podcasts, which are awesome, by the way. Heard some stories from some of your other guests. In preparation for this, we posted out a question on Reddit asking for stories, and it's almost too dark to go into. You know, I mean, the reality is lost jobs, like up and down the chain, a lot of derailed careers, millions of dollars lost of company. Mm-hmm. And worse is, I mean, you see founders having to shut down businesses, you know, pretty dark scenarios, I would say.
Right.
So maybe as a lighter one, and this will, maybe after this, we can come back to that number one problem I see people not accounting for in their planning. But we have, you know, we have our backup administrators, ourselves, our sysadmins, and then we have one of our backup sales engineers, super sharp guy. He knows the software inside and out. He's helping customers with this stuff all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And he went to, he got a new computer. So he's like, well, let me try a bare metal restore onto it for my backup of my device. This is his own data. This is not a disaster. He's knowledgeable. And the short of it is, he thought this would maybe take an hour, ended up taking about 10 hours to complete for a single system, you know, and that's, it was really the result of no muscle memory. He wasn't operating off checklists, made some mistakes, and there were some unexpected issues, like something as simple as like BIOS settings. All to say, this gave the backup administrators a good chuckle, and lesson here is to be well-prepared, you know, and it proves like knowing the software is not sufficient to perform a recovery, let alone he doesn't have people staring over his shoulder. This is not a real emergency, phone ringing off the hook. You know, you have to be prepared. And it's not like in case of a disaster, it's not the time to experiment. It's not the time to be looking through manuals.
Right.
You know, you need to be truly dummy proof in that type scenario. Sounds like you probably can relate to that from, from some of the testing you did.
Yeah, I've had Christmases ruined. Because the backup system, I mean, you talk HA, two backup servers were like in this high availability cluster. So there's a heartbeat in between. And if one backup server goes down, the other one is supposed to take over. But that didn't happen, like Christmas Eve. And all the backups failed, all 200-300 of them failed. And it was... Yeah, it was not a good sight. So I am, I don't even want to talk about it because it's just bringing back so many bad memories. And I'm hoping we are at a place now where we can leverage things like AI and automation and do it the right way with the knowledge and the expertise and the experience where you've rehearsed it, you've practiced it, and maybe even you have some of those recovery capabilities automated where you can hit a button and it starts, you know, running down and doing things for you. So yeah, and maybe one final question here before we begin to close out. A college student, because I have lots of computer science majors that there are juniors and seniors in college. And I like to get advice from guests that I have on the show sometimes to give them advice. Like what advice do you give to them as far as they haven't had an internship and they are close to graduating? What field would you have them to maybe go into, or maybe some advice for them as they are looking?
Yeah, I would say I see a lot of hyper specialization coming out of school, especially computer science, which is good. There's, you know, there's the depth to that. It can help you find a job for sure, because I do this very specific thing. Let me go look for that specific thing. I would say probably don't be afraid to go off track. So where I see this as a failure point too, if when people become too specialized, they put in over importance on that job and they don't understand maybe the big picture, the strategy. Okay. And that goes back to the number one problem I was saying that I see with DR planning is people aren't rolling this back up to the bigger strategy. They don't understand
what's the leadership,
business continuity plan, disaster recovery, backup testing. Everything's like a subset down. How do the activities feed into that and the core objectives and KPIs of, you know, of all this? So, you know, for someone coming out of college wondering what to do, I think don't get too stressed out if that first job you get isn't exactly what you want. I mean, I'm a product of bouncing around to all sorts of jobs, and that only helps. It gets you the broader exposure.
Right.
You know, maybe some specialization you think is super important. It is important, but you know, you also need to consider X, Y, and Z, which maybe you pick by getting exposure into these other areas. So that over specialization, I even see that with people maybe 5-10 years into their career, and they really don't have a good context on business. You know, why is this function even being performed at a business?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. And look, I have tons of conversations with college students, and I don't get it nowadays because they have cell phones. Everyone has cell phones. And when I was in high school, of course, there were no cell phones, right? And so I said, there's no excuse. So above and beyond your normal coursework, I mean, you should be on YouTube or an online training like Udemy or something, and just doing your own self-learning and looking at the news to see what's going on with AI and, oh, what are all these different cyber attacks and what is ransomware? And because they're affecting universities as well, because most universities have been hit with ransomware, and systems are down, or they can't teach a class because the whole system is down. But
that's right. Yeah,
Justin. So I appreciate the insight that you've provided, and I'm hoping the audience will walk away with a few nuggets of being able to be a lot more clear around some of the disaster recovery scenarios and strategies, making sure you're prepared. So it's a top-down thing. So leadership has to be in sync, and leadership has to abide by whatever the service level agreements and the RTOs and RPOs, all those things.
Yeah.
Are set at the business level, and then they carry that down through the rank and file. So any final shout out, how can Gumbo listeners maybe find you or even like your website as well?
Yeah, I would say come out if any of this interests you and you want to think about the incentives up and down the chain and how this comes to handling these and being prepared, because, you know, worst case, you're at system admin, backup administrator, you're responsible for this and you're worried that your company is not handling it right. And should something happen, you're going to be in the hot seat. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of good resources. I think just come out to Zamanda.com, but specifically you can go to Zamanda.com/DR plan for disaster recovery plan. That'll give a checklist that really looks at things strategy wise, top down. We have some great articles that will be available on mastering disaster recovery, from like looking at the different 7 levels of preparedness, handling offsite backups, handling testing, how software like Zamanda fits into how its features can fit in and help, but what those limitations are of any backup software. Of course, would love to talk to anybody about what their setup is, how it can be improved, if we can save them money.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I love talking about this stuff. So happy to do it anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being a guest right here on Data Protection Gumbo. And don't forget, before you sign off, we do have a backup and recovery professionals group on LinkedIn. There are almost 26,000 people, if I'm not mistaken, that's in that group. And we have similar conversations to the ones that we're having right here on the podcast as well. So be sure to go check that group out, sign up and become a member as well. And go to our YouTube page. You know, it's very new. We don't have very many subscribers, but I'm hoping to change that as well. So Justin, once again, thank you for being a guest right here on Data Protection Gumbo.
Yeah. Thank you, Demetrius. You're doing awesome service to the community. Appreciate it.